If you don't recognize that sound recorded back in 1994, I've got two words that might help you out. Zambezi, zinger. If you grew up in Kansas City between 73 and 97, you remember the Zambezi Zinger. It wasn't the scariest ride. It didn't go upside down or anything like that. But it was famous for a fast, steep drop by the standards of the day, of course. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're talking about nostalgia for roller coasters and amusement parks. Do memories of certain rides connect us to the places where we grew up and to the people who grew up there with us? I'd like to start by welcoming Lucas Wetzel to Central Standard. He's a freelance writer and editor whose blog post about the Zambezi Zinger has made the rounds online. Hi, Lucas.
Hi.
What got you thinking about the Zambezi Zinger?
I experienced a sensation of movement just now listening to that sound. I think I was just up late one night, and somebody had sent me a video of the Zambezi Zinger. Just kind of remember this, and it was a video you could actually watch on YouTube, experiencing the whole ride, and it really took me back. And I started just looking around online and remembering that ride and just. Couldn't forget how much fun that was. It was the first roller coaster that I probably rode, and I think that was a lot of people's experience as well. So
yeah, because that's the first one you would kind of get tall enough to ride beyond like the ones that just kind of make the curvy shape or something.
Exactly. Yeah, it had a sign that said must be four pygmies tall to ride, and it had these little skulls stacked on each other. It was really cool.
So the pygmies were feet?
I think they were feet or skulls or something like that.
Do you remember the first time you rode that ride, the Zambezi Zinger?
I don't remember the first time I rode, but I remember always wanting to go there because it was surrounded by such lush vegetation and trees that it really felt like you were in a different country or something. Worlds of Fun really, at that time, cultivated that sense of being in a different place, a different country, and it really felt like you were stepping into some kind of tropical environment there.
How often did you go to Worlds of Fun as a kid?
I probably went about once or twice a year, except for the summer that I was 13, and I had a season passport that year, and probably went about 10 times.
10 times in one summer is pretty impressive.
It was impressive. It was fun.
Your blog post got me thinking about the Zambezi Zinger and feeling some real nostalgia for that ride that I didn't know I have. And I think it's because the Zambezi Zinger was kind of the everyman's roller coaster. You had to be really daring to ride the Orient Express or the EXT because those went upside down. But the Zambezi Zinger was all about suspense and speed. It was more about the fun than the scare.
Absolutely.
Can you describe the ride, just bring it to life for our listeners, what it's like to ride that ride?
Well, it's unusual in that you sit in the car and you're not strapped in by some kind of safety harness or seatbelt. You're just pretty much straddling somebody else. So that was always awkward. You're just waiting in line, like, who am I going to have to sit next to? You never wanted to go solo if you didn't have to. It's not a good ride to go potluck on. Although some people in forums I saw were, you know, they would meet somebody there and fall in love for about a minute and 37 seconds and then it would be over. So you start out going up this corkscrew turn, and it just builds all this anticipation. And I think that's one reason that people remember it so well.
Yeah, you circled and climbed.
Exactly. And then
and
it just clicked. Takes this,
it clicked a
it
lot.
It clicked and clacked all the way up. And then you're 75 feet up in the air, and you do this drop, and it's really exciting, dramatic. And then it just banks really sharp left after that. And then
through
it's
some trees.
Kind of, through some trees. It kind of zigs and zags.
I thought that was the scariest part of that ride was when suddenly there were like trees very nearby. I thought I was going to hit them or something.
I think I remember grabbing leaves. I was like, I want a souvenir and I'm going to grab a leaf and that'll be really, you know, connect me to this tropical environment somehow.
So the Zambezi Zinger was removed from the park in 1997. How old would you have been then?
I would have been about 16.
Did it matter to you when you were 16 years old, like even then, that the Zambezi Zinger would no longer be a Kansas City tradition?
I don't think I was very aware of it at the time. I think I stopped, you know, I've probably only been one or two times since then and didn't pay a lot of attention to it. So it kind of quietly disappeared. And the ripcord was this huge thrill, too. It was about who wanted to pony up $25 or something to do that sort of controlled bungee jump, the ripcord. So it kind of disappeared out of my consciousness until, you know, 10 or 15 years later when I started doing some homework on it and wrote that blog post.
Well, why does it matter to you now?
It matters now mostly because it's become this talking point. It's something that everybody here seems to remember. I think because it was the first roller coaster, because it was so unique in its design and its feel, I think it keeps it a good conversation starter for Worlds of Fun or for childhood memories and amusement parks and things like that. But it was, you know, it's got a great name and was really one of a kind. It didn't feel like a generic theme park ride that you might find at any Six Flags.
Where did you turn to satisfy your curiosity about what happened to this roller coaster?
The internet, of course, which is a great place to research everything you're nostalgic about from being a kid. So I got online and got on some forums, and I think it was a site called worldsoffun.org. It might have been created by one of the forums I was on was a couple who had met working at Worlds of Fun. So I got deep into the reviews of the rides and pictures about it, and I realized, you know, some fascinating stuff about it.
Well, Jennifer Lovesey Mast, who is a part of this discovery process, is here in the studio with us this morning. Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're the Midwest representative for American coaster enthusiasts, and you're writing a book on the history of amusement parks. Can you explain your fascination?
Well, it's actually a book on the history of World of Fun specifically. There are so many books out there on the history of just amusement parks in general. How I got into it? Actually, it was kind of just by accident. I went to World of Fun probably just a couple of times when I was a kid, but they made such an impact. And
Those trips did,
absolutely. And I remember riding this one gondola ride, and I went back there my senior trip in 1996. And I was like, where is it? Where'd it go? And my dad.
I kind of remember that, a gondola ride.
Yeah, it was actually the Sky High, yes. And my dad said, well, why don't you go check out the Missouri Valley Room on the fourth floor of the downtown library. So I did, and I discovered a 1973 map. I was like, ah! And, you know, for a couple of years, I started collecting and making photocopies of the stuff. And then the internet, you know, kind of took off. And that was 1997. And I created a free little tripod site to put all of the stuff that I had found. And people started coming to it and say, oh, do you remember this? Do you remember that? And it's just been a crazy roller coaster ride since then. You know, really. So, and I love it. It's never gotten old for me.
So I understand that you know pretty much when each ride was constructed, where it was constructed, what happened to them when they were decommissioned. How did you do that depth of research?
Well, first of all, I think a lot of the rides, when they get built, get a lot of media coverage. So it's easy to go to the Kansas City Star, Kansas City Times, and discover, okay, this is when this was built. A lot of the other stuff, as far as when they were taken out, and a lot of the inside detail, I have a lot of friends, you know, that worldsoffun.org wouldn't be what it is without them.
And that's your site.
Yes, worldsoffun.org is my husband and I. Jeff Mast is my husband. We've been running it. He came on board probably around 2000. And actually, I think Lucas mentioned the couple that had met at Worlds of Fun. That's actually how my husband and I met, is at Worlds of Fun.
So that's you guys.
Yes, that's us.
Well, was the Zambezi Zinger that we've just heard about, was that part of a trend in roller coasters?
The Zambezi Zinger was built by a German designer, Anton Schwarzkopf, and he was a big coaster designer at the time. And I think it's funny he mentioned how Zinger was unlike all the other coasters like at Six Flags Parks, and it's a Six Flags Park that still has the last remaining Speed Racer coaster in the country.
So describe what is a Speed Racer coaster? That's the type that the
yes.
Zambezi Zinger is.
Yes, there were four Speed Racer coasters built. The Big Bend at Six Flags Over Texas in 75, Zinger, of course, and the two Willard's Wizards coasters in 76, if I remember right. And they were built by Anton Schwarzkopf. He actually got into coaster designing coasters for the European fair circuit to move around and all these different European cities. And he came over to the United States and started building coasters here. You know, of course, Revolution at Six Flags Magic Mountain is a big one that he built. That was the first modern looping coaster ever built. And, you know, he built the four speed racer coasters. And there's actually a few other coasters that were meant to be portable models that are still operating throughout the United States. Unfortunately, there's not that many left, which is very sad.
Do with the speed racer coasters, do people always like straddle each other?
Yes. Actually, the speed racers and the he had a model type coaster, and the speed racer is a permanent version of it, and I can't remember what it's called, and I'm sure somebody will call in and tell me exactly what it is. But they were straddled like that. You rode kind of like you ride on Viking Voyager. You're riding in everybody's lap, you know, and it's a very unique way of riding a coaster. And I personally love it because I've ridden, you know, the one up at Great America with my husband like that several times, and it's nothing like it out there.
Did you and your husband ever ride the Zambezi Zinger together?
It was gone by the time we met. We met in the summer of 1998, so sadly.
I did see a lot of comments from people when I put up the blog post. People would email me and tell me all about their history with that roller coaster. And several people I met, you know, my first date was going to Worlds of Fun and going that roller coaster, or I had my first kiss on that roller coaster. And
about you?
Well, summer of 94, again, season passport holder. 13 years old. The song Stay by Lisa Loeb was really big. And Mr. Jones by Counting Crows. And you'd hear those about 10 times a day at Worlds of Fun. Eating funnel cakes, walking around. It was a magical summer. And I was kind of going out with a girl on my tennis team. By going out, you know, we would call each other on the phone and maybe hold hands once in a while. And the last outing of the summer for the tennis team, we went to Worlds of Fun, and we had to go back to school like a week later. She went to a different school. And we were on the Zambezi Zinger and either going up the track or something, and at one point she kind of turned around. I think on some level I realized, you know, this is my moment. This is supposed to be the first kiss right here. But instead, I just made a funny face. And the ride ended. We went to our respective schools and we never saw each other again. So there's a certain wistfulness there that informs my perspective on the Zambezi Zinger.
Your missed first kiss.
My missed first kiss, the opportunity that never happened. And then they took the ride down and I grew up and here we are.
Yeah, and here we are. So Jennifer, is there anything from a roller coaster history perspective that you need to add about Lucas's observations and descriptions of this particular ride? Anything that we've missed that's sort of like a crucial detail?
I think one
it's
of the
green.
Things, yeah, exactly. I think one of the things that you had mentioned earlier is that, you know, it's big, steep first drop. And actually the fastest part of the Zinger wasn't that drop. It was actually the high speed turn that was where you went around the lift hill and through the trees. And that actually was the fastest part of the ride and was halfway through the ride itself.
I kind of remember bracing myself.
Yeah, that was probably exactly what you're talking about. And actually, there's a great model that World of Fun has put into one of their shops this year of the Zambezi Zinger. It was built by a friend of mine. And if anybody goes by World of Fun, they can actually see a working model of what the Zinger used to look like. It's a lot easier to imagine it when you see something in person, I think so.
And have we mentioned the tunnel?
It ended oh my gosh, tunnel, yeah. How so. Could you forget the tunnel? Oh my gosh.
That was where a lot of the first kisses apparently took place.
Yeah, absolutely. And there were so many rumors about how there were snakes or anything like that in there too. That tunnel is still there, actually. They tried to unbury it for their Dinosaurs Alive exhibit, but it for some reason it wasn't going to work, so they recovered it back up. It's still there.
You can't bury the past, World of
nope,
Fun.
Nope, can't bury it. Well, I like to say that part of what I do is I keep the past alive, and if you keep the past alive, those rides never die.
So why was the Zambezi Zinger decommissioned? Do you know?
Actually, the guy that designed it, Anton Schwarzkopf, brilliant coaster designer. I always like to say I can't think of a single flop that he ever had designed. Great coaster designer, not a great guy with money. Declared bankruptcy at least a couple of times. Finally went out of business in 1995. And unfortunately, that caused the downfall for a lot of his rides. You just couldn't get parts for them. Or if you did, you had to make them yourself, and that was just insanely expensive.
So what was the answer to Lucas's question? What happened to the Zambezi Zinger? Where did it go?
Well, it got sold to a ride broker. World of Fun sold it to a ride broker, and my understanding of it is they didn't expect it ever to run again. My husband was told shortly after it was taken out of the park where it got moved to, which is a park in Bogota, Colombia, South America. And we knew for a few years that it was supposedly operating down there. And then the YouTube video came out. There's a YouTube video of it actually operating in South America. And then my husband met a guy down at IAPA, which is the big convention for amusement park companies, who actually operated that park. And he said, yep, we're still operating it. And I have a friend of mine that actually rode it down in South America.
Wow. Lucas, how did you feel when you found out that the Zambezi Zinger, your Kansas City roller coaster, was still around in Colombia, not the city, but the country?
Well, it was a little bit like finding out that Jimi Hendrix was still alive and playing in some kind of jazz lounge in Tokyo. I was really shocked and excited. I think I found that out on Jennifer's site, worldsoffun.org. It was, you know, late at night or early in the morning whenever I did internet nostalgia research.
Not an appropriate time to scream loudly.
Perfect time to scream loudly. nobody minded my apartment. So I discovered it, you know, I initially had posted on my blog that it was Bogota. And then I started getting some emails from people that said, actually, it's Quindío, a little ways outside of Bogota. And I believe it's in the National Coffee Park there. And one of the emails I got from somebody explained that it's now called Broca, La Broca. And that refers to a worm that grows inside of coffee beans and ruins them. So the ride is some sort of worm.
A character. New metaphor for
it. Yeah, and
it.
It's painted yellow, but I think it works with the corkscrew and everything, the worm that bores its way through the coffee bean.
You wrote about in your blog that you had started saying about things that weren't around anymore, that they had gone the way of the Zambezi Zinger, kind of like how people say that, like, say, manners, for example, have gone the way of the dodo. When you use that phrase, gone the way of the Zambezi Zinger, with other people from Kansas City, did they laugh? Did you exchange a knowing look?
Well, I think it was used with a friend of mine just on a front porch. We were talking about a couple people who we weren't sure if they were still even around or not. And
just in Kansas City.
Yeah, in Kansas City. And we make a lot of local references. And she said, I think she's riding the Zambezi Zinger now. She's no longer with us. So it just kind of been thrown around that phrase, really, which is this one friend of mine. And so I emailed him right away when I found that out. I'm like, oh, she's writing the Zambezi Zinger now. It doesn't work anymore unless it means that this person or this thing went to South America.
But that phrase, I think about people moving away from Kansas City as sort of like, I don't know, something that we think of people doing maybe when they're looking for progress or to move forward in their lives. Does that phrase have something to do with that too?
I hadn't really looked at it that way, but I think it definitely could have something to do with that. You know, I'd taken it as just kind of a euphemism for saying this person's no longer with us. But considering that it's still around and considering how many people from other places who used to live in Kansas City or maybe visited Kansas City have since written in to Jennifer or I to talk about it, I think that definitely could be used that way.
If you have a Midwestern roller coaster memory that you'd like to share, call us at 816-235-2888. Tell us about a ride that means something to you, and a roller coaster historian in the room will do her best to give you the info about the ride, including possibly where it is now. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. Central Standard will return. I'm Gina Kaufman. You're listening to Central Standard, and our topic today is roller coaster nostalgia. Our guests are freelance writer and editor Lucas Wetzel, whose essay about the Zambezi Zinger has made the rounds online, and Jennifer Lovesey Mast, who's researching a book on the history of Worlds of Fun. Jennifer, how long have amusement parks been around? Do you know?
Oh, that's a good question. I know it's somewhere before the turn of the 20th century. I know Cedar Point up in Sandusky traces its history back to 1870. It hasn't been continuously operating since then, but definitely over 100 years. I know that there's Lake Compounds is supposed to be the oldest continuously operating amusement park, and I know it's somewhere like in the 1880s, 1890s, but I'm not entirely sure of the year that it opened.
Is Worlds of Fun part of a specific era or style of amusement park?
Absolutely, yes. Disneyland, of course, opened in 1955, and it just completely revolutionized the way that, you know, we looked at theme parks and amusement parks. And corporations nationwide said, let's build a Disneyland here. In fact, I believe Jack Stedman visited Disneyland, I believe, in 1957 and thought this would be a great idea to build it in Kansas City.
So Jack Stedman, is he who started Worlds of Fun?
Unfortunately, I will never know the whole history of Jack Stedman, but I do happen to believe that, yes, I personally believe he was kind of like the father of Worlds of Fun. I'd like to believe that at least.
Why is this an unknown part of the story that we don't know how it started?
Well, like I said, unfortunately, I will never know the whole story, but I think that it was his idea. He went to Lamar Hunt. There are many, actually, stories in the Kansas City Star that interviewed him back when Worlds of Fun was being constructed and being built. And he was quoted, you know, I believe he came up with the balloon logo idea. I believe he came up with the name Worlds of Fun. It was very obviously his idea. I think kind of almost Lamar Hunt just kind of went along for the ride, so to speak. So, and there's actually a plaque at Worlds of Fun dedicated to Jack Stedman in front of the Tivoli Music Hall. It is still there, and it discusses how he made such an impact in the park. And its lush landscaping, you know, that was so prevalent in the 70s and 80s and 90s was a big thanks to him. So,
Joyland in Wichita was closed a few years back. It stood abandoned for a while and seems to have been a kind of popular place to sneak into for nostalgia Wichita folks and also vandals. But the rides were finally destroyed in a storm last month. What do you know about Joyland?
I went to Joyland several times when it was still operating as a member of ACE. You know, we had our national convention
Enthusiasts.
I'm sorry. American Coaster Enthusiasts. We had our annual convention there in 1993. Roller Coaster, which was actually the name of the roller coaster, was a classic style coaster. You know, was built in the 1940s by Philadelphia Toboggan Company. And it's horrible. It saddens me that that it's gone. And we actually did try to make an attempt to preserve it, to get it moved to another park. But wooden coasters are just not that easy to move, unfortunately. And so,
what's going on with amusement parks now? Are there current trends? Or, like, if Worlds of Fun was part of an era, what is today's era?
That's a really good question. I mean, obviously, there for many years, the era was build the biggest, tallest, fastest coaster that you can. And Top Thrill Dragster up at Cedar Point is a definite icon to that. It's like over 400 feet tall, goes up to 120 miles per hour. I think it's kind of more back to basics at this point in time. You know, building a good coaster does not necessarily mean building the world's fastest, tallest, longest coaster. And we're not living in an age like we were 10 years ago where, you know, everybody was building coasters and it was completely crazy there for about a decade. But it's still moving forward. We still see new coasters opening every year, so, and that's good.
Lucas, amusement parks are highly artificial environments. I mean, that's probably true of most of the places we go, but what does Worlds of Fun have to do with your very authentic sense of place here in Kansas City?
I think because Worlds of Fun, and it was at Mr. Stedman. You said there's the father of Worlds of Fun.
I consider him that. I think a lot of people that know me know my.
Yeah, someone clearly had a vision for that place to be set apart from the rest of the city and from other amusement parks in general. And I think Worlds of Fun, what everybody remembers so much is stepping into a totally different environment and going to be able to navigate different countries, so to speak, or different areas. And it looks so much different. I think for sense of place, the uniqueness of the ZMBZ Zinger itself, but uniqueness of the park and the environment. You know, in your day-to-day life, you're seeing strip malls or malls, and it's somewhat homogenous environment. So when you step into somewhere like Worlds of Fun, it's you're a totally different place and you really remember it.
Let's talk about some rides. You can call 816-235-2888 if you have an important memory connected with a specific roller coaster. That's 816-235-2888. I want to talk about the EXT with you guys. My older brother was so excited the year they turned that into a standing ride. I was not tall enough to ride it yet, thank God, because I was actually not that excited about this idea. I was terrified. But that was a big deal.
Absolutely. When EXT got converted, or when Scream Roller got converted to the EXT or Extreme Roller in June of 1983, that was a huge deal. It was my husband and I kind of joked that World of Fun and Six Flags St. Louis were kind of in a nuclear arms race at the time for who could, you know, open it first, because they had their own version, the Trailblazer, that they were trying to get open. But World of Fun got there first, and I never rode it. I was only 6 years old when, you know, it opened, but I've talked to many people that have, and it was not a comfortable ride. And my husband and I actually have the stand-up pods from the EXT. We're actually storing them for the American Coaster Enthusiasts.
The stand-up pods, explain that.
Well, a roller coaster car, there's the chassis, which is the wheels and the steel structure. And then there is the pods, which is actually what holds the people. And we have the pods as well as the fiberglass from the EXT. The chassis was retained with the Scream Roller when it went back to being a sit-down coaster in 1984.
Well, wasn't there some debate about whether this was actually the first stand-up ride or not?
It was the first stand-up coaster in the Western Hemisphere. There was one in Japan that opened maybe a couple of years before. King Cobra at King's Island, which opened, I believe, in 1984, is always referred to as the first stand-up coaster. I refer it to as the first successful stand-up coaster, because it was actually billed as a stand-up.
Lucas, did you go on the EXT?
No, I never did.
Never?
Nope. I actually haven't been to an amusement park in probably 17 or 18 years. The ones I like going to are like the makeshift ones, like at least some at Oktoberfest, where everything gets loaded up and packed, you know, unfolded in a weekend, and then they pack up and go somewhere else. So I kind of like the smaller thrill rides.
Okay, let's talk to Randall. Randall is with us from Independence. Good morning.
Good morning.
What roller coaster do you want to talk to us about?
Well, you just talked about the EXT, and actually I was on the very first public ride of the EXT.
And it's stand-up version day, or before it's when it was a sit-down?
The stand-up version.
Dang. You weren't scared?
Actually, it did scare me. It was probably the first time I really got scared on a roller coaster, because I was 13 at the time, and you stood in these little pods. And it really, when you went down the first drop, your feet kind of lifted up off the floor, even though you had a shoulder harness. It didn't come down on kids all the way to your shoulders, so you really got some what they call airtime. Going through the loops, it would kind of hesitate, and again, your feet would come up off the floor an inch or two, and it felt like there was this perceived danger that you were going to perhaps fall out.
Were you? So you're like part of Kansas City news. That's like you've got some history.
Well, in addition to writing on that, I actually worked with Jennifer's husband back in 1985 on the Orient Express at World of Fun.
The Orient Express. I remember that one. Talk about it.
It was great. A lot of people remember seeing the monster. It was actually a dragon in the tunnel. You slipped down a 3-foot drop underneath the logo and went through a 100-foot tunnel. And then whenever it would engage into the chain lift, it would make this loud clanking sound, and it would kind of reverberate through the station. And it would kind of add to the anticipation or the suspense of when your ride was. If you were next in line, you would hear that. It would kind of be unsettling a little bit.
Randall, what do you want to say about how you feel about this roller coaster today, or what it means to you in your life today?
The Orient Express actually got my mother and my stepfather back together. We were living in Wichita when they built it, and I wanted to ride it so bad. My mom called my stepfather, who was living in Kansas City at the time, and was like, can I send him up there, and can you take him to ride this coaster, because he's going to drive me crazy until he gets to ride it. So that got them talking again.
That's amazing.
A couple of years later, we ended up moving back up to Kansas City, so World of Fun became my home park, and spent a lot of time there.
Thanks so much, Randall. So, Jennifer, what do we know about what happened to the Orient Express, the roller coaster that got Randall's mother and stepfather back together?
Actually, Randall's a really good friend of mine. I shouldn't probably say that. But and Randall and I often talk about how when we go to Silver Dollar City and we hear Thunderation, which is another Aero design coaster, and you hear that lift hill, there's just something so visceral about hearing that lift hill sound. And it sounded – Orient Express had that same sound, and it's just – you can't hear that without thinking Orient Express. What was your question? I'm so sorry.
What happened to the Orient Express?
Orient Express – got demoed. I actually watched it happen. It was very sad. Oh my gosh. I think 2002, 2003. It's horrible. I can't remember exactly what year it was.
That's okay.
It's funny because when they were tearing it apart, my husband followed one of the junk trucks that had all the Orient Express steel in it to the steel yard, and he actually was able to get about a 2-foot piece of Orient Express track, and we still have that. And
that's cool.
Yeah. So it was rainy and cloudy, and it was a very perfect weather for
what was happening.
For what was happening, yeah.
Let's talk to Tim in Fairway. Hi, Tim.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to speak to some of the magic of World of Fun. You know, I grew up, I moved here in the early 70s and started going to World of Fun, when I was five or six, and continued on from like the mid 70s through the mid 80s. And I just, I've been to Disney World with my kids now, and how you go through different worlds like Tomorrowland and whatnot. But I actually think in the era when I was a kid and when I used to go out to World of Fun, it was actually better in a way than Disney World, because the entire event, when you would come over the hill on 435, you would see the balloon, the water tower with the World of Fun painting. You would get off you'd get out of your car and you'd get on the propane-powered tram that would take you to the gate.
I forgot about those.
Oh, my gosh. How could you forget about the trams? Oh, my gosh.
I love that. I mean, I still remember the smell, of the propane.
Me too.
And so, what it did for me as a kid, it was so great because you could drop into a different world. Africana was different than Americana. I think it was Americana. And the music would change, and the way the bridge construction, the walkways and shops and everything would be thematic. And it was, as a 6 or 10-year-old, and it was so immersive and so much fun to crawl around this place. And the rides were great. I rode the EXT, the Scream Roller, the Timberwolf, certainly the Orient Express, which was my favorite, and had that awesome chicken exit.
So chicken exit. Oh, yeah, that's right. If you were waiting in line and you just, like, chickened out.
And that chicken exit sign is now on the Timberwolf exit.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's the same sign. It's actually, they moved it from the Orient Express to the Timberwolf, yep.
But it sounds like it's about the whole overall experience for you, Tim.
Yes.
Yeah, it really was. And I thought it did really – it was really great at that. I mean, I don't think it does as good now. It's still, I think, a great park. I still go every year with my kids. But it doesn't – it didn't have that feel that it did then necessarily where it was – I mean, they really worked, I think, on making each world, as you were, World of Fun, each world was dramatically different. And it felt that way when you walked around, and it was exciting.
I want to follow up on this idea because there is a culturally sensitive side of me that kind of cringes when I think about the names of some of these rides. That in today's world, to call a ride the Orient Express, paint it red, and put it in the body of a dragon, I think that wouldn't go over great. But I also really relate to what Tim's saying about the idea of immersing yourself in different worlds. Is that part of changing trends in amusement parks in general, or what is that?
I think, unfortunately, a lot of parks, they were beautifully themed, but because, Six Flags and all these corporations, they came out. And the theme in a lot of parks has vanished, and it's definitely decreased at Worlds of Fun. I would like to think that Worlds of Fun has held on to its theme a little bit better than some other parks have. But I'm with Tim. That's exactly how I remember Worlds of Fun. You drove up. There was the water tower. That was the Worlds of Fun skyline at that time. It was the water tower and the Orient Express. You got in. You rode the trams. And I still remember the smell of that propane as you rode those trams into the park. And every time I smell that, I just remember Worlds of Fun, the way it was when I was a kid. And the Americana Gate, which is no longer there, unfortunately. You know, you went in through the Americana Gate across the Henrietta. There was the Cotton Blossom, you know, and you rode the Sky High and you were above the park and it was, it had all the lights on it. And it was just, it was part of it, I think, is, you know, you remember things so well from your childhood. But I think it was truly magical.
Lucas, does the overall experience play into what you think of as like your Kansas City childhood?
I think it does. I think there were a few other places like the zoo, you know, with the monkey house is another structure that I've written about that people get really interested in. So it was a pretty defining thing of for Kansas City and for people who visited Kansas City at that time.
Let's talk to Maggie in the Ozarks. Hi, Maggie.
Hi.
What can you share with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
I was having pangs of Orient Express nostalgia before the previous caller came on, and I actually haven't been to World of Fun in many years and was unaware as to whether or not that coaster still stood at that location or not. But I just remember growing up as, I think I probably rode the Orient Express for the first time in the late 80s or early 90s, like as soon as I hit the height mark that I was able to go on it. And I just remember it being a tremendously empowering experience, and raising my own kids, I am enjoying watching them grow to hit those height marks and ride some of their first rides. And my family's actually looking forward to returning to Worlds of Fun for the first time in many years this summer. It'll be my husband and I's 10th wedding anniversary, and we were actually married at Oceans of Fun back when—
Married at Oceans of Fun.
We were. At the time, they said that we were the first couple to be married at Oceans of Fun, but that many couples over the years had been wed at Worlds of Fun. So we literally took the plunge and rode down the Aruba Tuba, which I hope is a waterslide that still stands.
Still there.
But that was really fun. And my husband has actually never ridden a roller coaster and made a bet with me many years ago that he now owes me a roller coaster ride. So he plans to take his first ride at Worlds of Fun this summer.
On your 10th anniversary.
On our 10th wedding anniversary, yes.
Congratulations,
Congrats.
Maggie.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
That idea of being empowered when you reach the height where you can go on a ride, do the amusement parks and theme parks in your hometown kind of become mile markers of your growth and a rite of passage?
Absolutely. I think, like you said, when you reach 36, 48 inches, 50 inches, like the magic 48 inches, you know, all of a sudden you can ride almost everything. Of course, now Patriot, you have the 54-inch height requirement in it. I worked on Patriot and having to tell kids that, well, you can ride every roller coaster but this one. That was always kind of sad, but, you know.
This is, for me, this is probably oversharing, but I don't think I'm necessarily alone here. Amusement parks, for me, carry a hint of sadness or maybe trying really hard to mask a difficult situation, because the summer my parents got divorced, my dad took us to Worlds of Fun a lot. And I'm pretty sure the smell of hot asphalt will always remind me of that time in my life. And I you know, there's that phrase, Disneyland Dad. I agree.
I'd never thought of it that way. But my wife worked for a screen printing company in Lawrence for a while, and they would do an annual summer visit there. And one of the employees said he wasn't going. She says, why not? He said, well, basically my parents bought me a season passport one year and just dropped me off there because it was cheaper than daycare. And there was a whole like pack of kids who was just, you know, dropped off there every day, and they all run around together. So he has very not positive memories of it. So it's interesting to look at it from that viewpoint as well.
I think also is that you might have just hit the nail on the head there, is that, you know, I mean, I had tough times when I was growing up as a kid, and when we went to Worlds of Fun, everything was all right. You know, it was a very positive, happy time in my childhood. And I think those of us that get so attached to Worlds of Fun or whatever your, you know, your local park is, I think a lot of it has to do with that, is that you form that happy time attachment to that local park.
Yeah, and you still have to go back to school or
yeah,
back
or
to
life
work in the
or
fall
real life, right?
Even
exactly.
If you have a great time there, it still comes to a close. So it's bittersweet.
Yeah, I think it is almost maybe the reason we have so much nostalgia around these things is because, like, that's kind of the definition of nostalgia. It's like this happy thing, but with this hint of melancholy because it's a thing you can't go back to, or just the idea of happiness with that kind of other undertone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right.
We have time for just one more quick call. I'm going to talk to Mary in Kansas City. Mary, we've just got a second, but share your story.
Yeah, well, it's a living story that still lives in our family with my grandson, and I was going to spend the day with him, and my son suggested that we go to Worlds of Fun. And I'm thinking, you know, he'll get on the little kiddie rides, and we're just going to have this little kumbaya day, and Lord have mercy. When you said the Zambezi Zinger, it's a horror story. It's a grandmother horror story because I got on that thing with my grandson. And it was the most terrifying thing I had ever experienced in my life. And he's in college now, but that story still lives inside of our family.
But what happened? Did you, like, scream? Did you, like, grab onto him for dear life?
I was too terrified to scream, but he could tell how terrified I was. And when we got off that thing, it was just like, let's go home right now.
But you made it.
And I know it has made that kind of impression on him that he saw how terrified I was. And it's just been the funniest story that we swapped, you know, back and forth in our family when we get together now. I will never forget the Zambezi Zinger.
I bet
it's... I really got zinged.
And you remember it forever.
I bet it's that way for a lot of people, that the scariest, that the most memorable are the ones that were the scariest.
Yes, absolutely.
Jennifer Lovesey Mast, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And Lucas Wetzel, this has been fun. Thank you.
It's been fun. Thanks a lot.
Lucas's story about the Zambezi Zinger will be on our website later today. When Central Standard returns, we'll turn our attention to the West Bottoms following news that the American Royal Barbecue Contest is moving to the Truman Sports Complex. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away.